Blog Talk Radio.
From deepest, darkest Africa, across the polar ice cap, spanning the jungles of South America, without a compass, without a map, Blog Talk Radio and Wildlife Educational Services presents Larry Batson's Wild World. Discover the wonders of the natural world with nationally known wildlife educator Larry Batson as we visit his wild world.
Hello, everyone, from the remote jungles of Clinton Falls, Indiana. Our premiere episode on Blog Talk Radio. This is very exciting. Sorry about the one-hour delay, but I think it's all due to the Taliban. Not sure, but we're here. It's going to be great. Managing the switchboard and also monitoring all the emails, my good friend, Mr. Eric Altman. Eric, how are you doing tonight?
I'm great, Larry. How are you tonight?
Well, we hope you get driven crazy.
I'm going to have fun with it. And thank you for offering me the opportunity to help you out with this. I'm excited.
Well, it should be exciting. People are going to have, for the very first time, the opportunity to kind of go into my world, because the broadcasting studios where we bring you this mega production is right here in my animal compound in West Central Indiana. I mean, at this very moment, folks, we're 20 paces from North American black bears, 30 paces from Bengal tigers, alligators, you name it. I have to give a little history on what we are all about for those that are unfamiliar. I have been for 31 years a wildlife educator. I've traveled all over the country with my collection of wild animals. My wife, Cheryl, who assists me now, is a part of this huge animal family. In fact, we'll start off tomorrow in Fort Wayne, Indiana, with our school tour. We're going to see about 200 schools with our collection of animals. This will mark the 31st year that we have done this. Can't believe it. Time flies by so quickly. You may have had the opportunity to see some of our animals in the past, because for many years, we worked with the Mutual of Omaha's Wild Kingdom. You know, Jim Fowler, of course, I shouldn't really call him his sidekick, because Marlon Perkins was actually the host of Wild Kingdom. Jim was the sidekick. Marlon was the one that would hang out in the native's tent and have cocktails while Jim wrestled the rhinoceros in heat by the river's edge. So we've had the chance to work with them. In fact, we used to go out and do the old Johnny Carson show. People would call up Jim and they say, "Jim, bring your animals." Well, Jim doesn't have any animals, but he knows lots of guys all over the country that are willing to fill their truck with whatever fauna they might be handling and raising, and traveling to who knows where, from anywhere from Los Angeles, California. We went to do the Explorers Club in New York City. Boy, you talk about if walls could talk, that building, man, it's just incredible. And also, we had a chance to see several different zoos over the years with our collection of animals. Those who want to call in and might have a question or a comment, that number to Blog Talk Radio, to Eric Altman, and he'll send the calls right in, is 347-855-8123. And listeners can mark the show as a favorite. And you can do that on the Blog Talk website. That would be fantastic. Also, we have a website, of course, that tells all about our wild animal rescue work that we do and the educational programs that we present. That's www.larrytheanimalguy.com. And those who wish to send me an email after the show and comment or have a question, they can do that as well at larry@larrytheanimalguy.com. We'd like to thank Blog Talk Radio. I'd also like to thank Radio Mom 91.1 FM for providing our opening announcement, Mr. Bill Shirk, and fantastic job. In fact, that was the first time I heard it, so it gave me cold chills. It was pretty exciting. Also, we are a 501c3 nonprofit corporation, so if you go to our website and you'd like to help out the rescue work that we do and the programs that we present, we're more than happy to take your contributions. We have listeners from around the world. In fact, I know right now we have a listener from New Zealand, Mr. Daniel Falconer. He's quite the artist. In fact, he worked on the mega film King Kong. So he's listening tonight down under. So, Daniel, I hope everything's good. We had a recent episode here at the Animal Compound that many of you may have heard about. It's been on our Facebook page, and the word's kind of spread. But last Saturday, I was in Martinsville, Indiana, doing a presentation. Got back to the headquarters here, and we were finishing up the day. And get ready to call it an evening of television and have a little bit of dinner and relax. We fed the baby baboon. We'd fed the baby bobcat, and I'd gone outside to the back part of the compound to get our African serval cat. If you're not familiar with that particular animal, it's like a miniature cheetah. And I'd gone back there to get the serval, and I was just getting ready to hook it up to a lead when I heard this god-awful scream from the front gate of the compound. Well, what had happened, our female wolf, she's about 2.5, 3 years old. Her name is Chloe. She ran out, and somehow she'd got her head, her neck, stuck in the gate. And she let out this tremendous scream, sounds I'd never heard before. Well, my dear wife, Cheryl, was sitting on the couch and waiting for me to come back in so we could have dinner. She heard this, and she frantically got up off the couch and ran outside, and there the wolf was. It was stuck, and it was screaming, so her first inclination is to try and help it. Well, as soon as she touches that female wolf, the male wolf, his name's Blake, he didn't know what was going on. Wolves are very loyal animals. As far as canines, are quite sophisticated. And he thought that my wife wasn't trying to help the young female wolf, Chloe. He thought she was trying to hurt her. So he went to the attack mode. So here I am on the other side of the fence, and my wife's saying, I think this wolf is attacking me. The first bite, first grab was her poor rear. It's not funny, but it's... And then, it was frightening. Believe me, it was very frightening at the moment. And then the next time he lunged, he had her by the arm. Well, she'd already let go of the female wolf and was retreating, and he quit immediately. But it didn't matter. I was determined that this wasn't going to happen again, so I finally got through that gate. And it was kind of like football last Sunday. I did a flying tackle, and I grabbed that male wolf by the cuff of the neck, and he went right to the ground. If you've ever watched The Dog Whisperer, he'll take a dog that's aggressive, hold it to the ground until its tail goes in a certain position, and submissive. And that's just the way that it is. That's what wild wolves will do. Well, that's exactly what I was doing. I was holding him down. Well, I watched his tail. It wasn't going quite in the position that I wanted it to. And I held him down for maybe 4 or 5 minutes. In this time frame, the female wolf had already gotten her neck out, her head out of the gate on her own, and she ran into the house. You see, these two wolves that we've raised, they don't really stay in enclosure. They stay in our home, and they run in the yard. In fact, they'll sleep at the end of our bed at night. You talk about a bodyguard, those two, that's it. So as I'm holding this wolf down, and I'm thinking he's halfway submissive, I decide to get up and let him up. Well, he had entirely different ideas. He lunged at me, and quick nip to the face, and then I think my anger doubled, and then down he went again, and this time I held him down for twice as long. And I watched that tail, and he did not go to the position that I wanted it. I wanted the tail to completely go back between his legs. And I finally decided that, well, maybe he's had a change of heart. Didn't work out that way. He came right back up, and he wanted to go at it again. This time, though, I just kept my stance, and he was afraid to lunge at me for the retaliation. And I kind of backed away from him and went into the house to take care of my poor wife. And I'll tell you what, folks, she was beat up pretty good. I've been doing this for close to 40 years. I've handled and dealt with just about every mammal, reptile, exotic animal you can name. I've been bitten by most animals that are native to North America. But those few moments with my wife in the danger that she was probably some of the scariest moments I've ever experienced. So when we took a look at her injuries, we knew right away she was going to have to go into the hospital. So she had a pretty good bite to the arm. That took about 8 stitches to put back together. And her poor rear. That's not funny, but she had several puncture wounds, and she was just, oh my Lord. She was just devastated because the wolf had done this. And so we got her cleaned up and took her into the hospital, and for all the folks that inquired, she's doing great. It's 8 stitches work perfectly. She's healing up. It's hard for her to sit down, though. I'll tell you, there's a lot of bruising involved. But I'll tell you what, I run into folks that come up and they'll say, man, I would do anything to do your job. And I'll always look at them. I said, well, you know, it has its good days and it has its bad days. But I don't really think they know what's involved with it, because wild animals are not necessarily unpredictable, but many instances they're fearless, especially when it comes to protecting ones that they per se love, whether it be youngsters or a mate or a friend. So you have to admire them for that. And you know, the wolf, and I don't want to disarm anybody to think that they can't go into the wilds of Canada and Alaska, Michigan, where wolves are native to the wild. I had a good friend who'd gone to British Columbia to study wolves, and he was there for 30 days before he even saw one. They're very shy and they're very reclusive. I have never heard of, and there's never been a documented attack by a wolf in the wild. Anything like this that has ever happened has always been a captive wolf. And here's what's involved. The wolf loses fear of humans. A few years ago, we were up in a community called Stevens Point, Wisconsin, and they had a roadside zoo. It was a little zoo, and to give you an idea of what kind of an outfit it was the zoo director also pumped gas on the corner filling station. And they had several wolves, and they had probably a 3 or 4 acre enclosure encircled with 10-foot fence. But one of the neighbor children, on the way home from school, would stop by and look at the wolves, and he'd also tease the wolves. Well, they had electric wire around this fence, so the wolves couldn't bump the fence or even attempt to climb it. Because they're pretty amazing animals. I mean, if a wolf wants out of something, it's pretty tough to keep them in. It takes a lot of cage design, a lot of extra work, sometimes more than other wild animals. But you see, those wolves knew when that young man would stick his finger through the fence, they knew if he stuck his finger through that one particular link, that they could grab it, and they wouldn't be shocked by that wire. And that's exactly what happened one afternoon. That young man walked up to that fence, and he poked one finger through that fence, and the wolves had it, and they took it off. Well, right away, the whole community, they were, man, the wolves have injured these children, this child. We've got to kill them. We've got to get rid of them. Well, you know, it wasn't the wolves' fault. Young man walked by that wolf enclosure probably every day, and he did the same thing to tease those wolves. Well, while we were there, they informed us that those wolves had cubs. And their plan with those cubs was they were going to kill them all because they wanted no more wolves. In fact, the city council was even contemplating destroying the whole pack. So they approached me. I was in Stevens Point. In fact, I was doing some lectures, believe it or not, in a shopping mall. It's years ago. This was, 82, 83. So they came in there and they said, hey, they told me what had happened. They said, if you come in, and you can have these wolf cubs, because if you don't take them, we're going to destroy them. Well, that to me, that wasn't going to happen. Because that was what we were up against with these two wolves that we have now. If we had not provided them a home, they were going to kill them. So I said, okay, we'll take the wolves. I said, we'll come in. Let's see, at the shopping mall Sunday, we'll come in Monday morning, and we'll attempt to go into the den and get the four cubs or six cubs or whatever's in there out. They didn't know how old the cubs were. They could hear them in the den. And they didn't know how many there were. Now, the den was basically a concrete pipe, very similar to what they put under bridges, and they'd buried that in the ground. Now, doesn't fail me here. There was about five or six wolves in this enclosure, one big male wolf, and I'm going to tell you right now, he was a giant. He was huge. And the fellow that operated the zoo, he was totally not interested in going in with these wolves. He was totally not interested in trying to take one of these wolf cubs or all of them out of there. But he said, if I can help, I'll do it. So I told him the game plan. I said, here's what we're going to do. We're going to drive this van right into the enclosure, because there's enough room for that. We're going to drive it into the enclosure. And here's a stick. Well, basically what it was a fishnet with a stick on the end of it. You know the kind you use when you're up there in Wisconsin fishing for the big northerns and the walleyes. So I told him, I said, here's what's going to happen. I said, that male wolf is going to circle this van. I said, you hold this stick in front of you now. If that wolf moves in, you take a step toward him, and you swing that stick at him. Well, I knew wolf behavior well enough that I knew that male wolf wasn't going to come close to that van. He wasn't going to come close to us. Because anything a wolf doesn't know, they don't trust. And anything they don't trust, they just stay away from, like a van. So here he was circling, and here was the poor guy in his filling station shirt. Holding up this fish net in front of him, and I was the only one the right size that I could actually fit inside of that pipe. Now, I had no idea where the female was. I didn't know how old the cubs were, so climbing in that pipe was really, I'm going to tell you, it was pretty interesting. It was a true moment of excitement. So I'm climbing down this pipe, and believe it or not, there's a fair amount of light. I can see in there pretty good. So I get down in this pipe, and I can see the female wolf, and she's got her lip curled in there. I look at the cubs, and there's six of them. And they just had their eyes open. I'm going to tell you, they were beautiful. They were gorgeous. So the female wolf was looking at me. She had that lip curled and those teeth showing. But I knew wolves well enough that if I could get in position and hold her back, I could grab those cubs and pull them out of there. So basically what I did was I got close enough, and before she realized what had happened, I had her by the nape of the neck, and I was pinning her up against the wall with my right hand, and with my left hand, I was grabbing these wolf cubs out one at a time, taking them over my back, and handing them to the fella outside. And then when we got all six cubs out of there, I just kind of let go of her. She just kind of kept her position. And I says, thank you. I'm hopefully saving these young wolves' lives. And I backed out of that pipe, and that was it. The male wolf just continued to circle the van. And we loaded up into the van. we pulled out of there, and you saw those wolves possibly because, I don't know, was it 2 weeks after that, we went to took them to Los Angeles. We took them on the Johnny Carson show. Oh, yeah, that was cool. In fact, if you saw the segment, they handed the young wolves a chicken leg, and two of the wolves grabbed each end of the chicken leg. We handed them another one, and two other of the wolves each had an end. They were pulling on it, had a tug of war, and it was some pretty good television. Well, right after we did the Carson segment, we took them, did several programs with them. In fact, I can still remember we did a show in Syracuse, New York. It was one of these early morning talk shows. And they had a garden outside, and they were giving gardening tips. Well, these wolves, we didn't have them on any leashes or anything. And right before we did our segment for this show in Syracuse, New York, there was a gal from the Humane Society that had a cat that was up for adoption. So she's doing her segment. She's got the cat on her lap, and lo and behold, the wind changed. And that cat bounced off of her lap and took off like the wind. And they couldn't find it. And we had the wolves running up and down the rows of corn that were growing. They were having a fine old time. And we did the segment. And by then, they'd known me well enough that they would come when I'd call them. And here they came. And I thought, man, I said, here we had these wild timber wolves on television with no problem. And then the domesticated cat, I think if my memory is correct, it ended up in a tree, and the fire department rescued it finally. But wolves are incredible animals. In fact, you know, for many years they've been, I can remember lecturing with wolves in the early 80s, and it was all negative. But now I think with the Discovery Channel and Animal Planet, it's all changed. People realize the importance of wolves. Areas where wolves have been wiped out, the overpopulation. I'm going to tell you right now, Jackson Hole, Wyoming, the elk situation there for years was so bad, and I always said to myself, I said, they need to bring some wolves in there. Of course, they did reintroduce them to Yellowstone National Park, and that's changed things there. Of course, a lot of people say, well, the wolves will leave the park. Well, of course they will. But, you know, they've been there long before we were. And I have a friend in British Columbia. I called him once because I'd written an article about, and it was just one sentence in a newspaper, and I said in that sentence, you know, maybe with the overpopulation of deer that we have to deal with here in Indiana, you know, reintroduce the wolf. Oh, my God, yeah, I may have well said Hitler was a good guy. This one fellow wrote a letter, and he said, you don't know what you're talking about. Wolves have no place in the modern society. So I called my friend in British Columbia, and I asked him, I said, you have wolves up there? And he says, yeah. I says, you have ranchers up there? He goes, yeah. He says, are the ranchers concerned with the wolves? He says, no. He says, the ranchers up here have found they've lost more cattle to either bad winters or lightning than wolves. And remember the film Never Cry Wolf, where the fellow that was studying them figured it out that wolves were living primarily on rodents. They weren't able to bring back down the big animals. I mean, sure, they'll kill a baby moose, they'll kill a baby elk, but it's all Mother Nature's plan. The big, healthy animals, they can't bring down, not unless there's other elements involved. That's what they're supposed to do. And they're so sophisticated, every day I spend with these wolves and have a chance to observe them, I realize how intelligent these animals are and how much we can learn from them. And this incident the other night showed me one thing. It shows me wolves are very loyal. In fact, if you go to our website, LarryTheAnimalGuy.com, and you click Cheryl's blog, she wrote a pretty good blog on her experience the other night. And it really puts everything in perspective. And I'll tell you what, she's a pretty brave woman to go through what she went through and have the feelings that she did. In fact, when we returned from the hospital that night, all was well. That wolf came right up to her and acted like nothing had happened, and then proceeded to sleep at the very end of her bed that night. And I have to tell you, though, he has a whole new respect for us and my wife. So it's a chapter of our life we don't really want to repeat, but it taught me a great deal about this very fascinating and interesting animal that I don't want to see disappear. We need wolves. We need, if we do not have room on this planet for our wild animals, there's no room for us as well. For the children that grow up, I want them the opportunity, if they go to places like Isle Royale, Yellowstone National Park, British Columbia, that they might be lucky enough and to have the chance to either see a wolf or maybe hear that beautiful song at night, because they're definitely part of the natural world. We have some commercial breaks coming up. We'll carry on, folks. Back more with Larry Batson's Wild World.
Stay tuned. We'll be back with more of Larry Batson's Wild World here on Blog Talk Radio.
Take me fishing and show me how to drive the boat.
Take me fishing so I can tell you what a great dad you've been.
Take someone you love out on the water and see where the water takes you.
Take me fishing because I miss my boy.
Rediscover the joy of boating and fishing. Get information and get going at takemefishing.org.
Ranger Station, Ranger speaking.
Yeah, hi. I'd like to report a bear sighting.
Location?
In the forest near the side of the road.
No need for alarm, sir. The forest is where bears live.
But this was no ordinary bear.
No ordinary bear?
Yeah, one second I'm having a smoke taken in the view. Next thing I know, I am face to face with Smokey Bear.
Let me guess, Smokey had a tip for you.
He did. He must have seen me toss my cigarette on the ground. He told me never to do that because it only takes one spark to start a wildfire.
He's a smart bear. Did you know that 9 out of 10 wildfires are caused by humans? That means 9 out of 10 wildfires can be prevented.
That's what Smokey said. I had no idea.
That's why Smokey's famous, and you're not.
Good point.
Get your Smokey on. If you see someone in danger of starting a wildfire, step in and make a difference, because 9 out of 10 wildfires are caused by humans. Brought to you by Smokey Bear, the U.S. Forest Service, your state forester, and the Ad Council. Learn more at SmokeyBear.com. Only you.
There are some visitors you'd just rather not see. Like your obnoxious brother-in-law, Louie.
Hey, everybody, we're here. Good to see you. When do we eat?
But then there are some visitors you just can't get enough of. To make your farm or ranch a more attractive place for the visitors you actually want to see, contact your local Natural Resources Conservation Service office. They can help you build the habitat wildlife loves. But as for Louie, try disconnecting the doorbell. This message brought to you by USDA's Natural Resources Conservation Service and this radio station.
Welcome back to Larry Batson's Wild World here on Blog Talk Radio. Once again, here's your host, Larry Batson.
Hello, everyone, from the remote jungles of Clinton Falls, Indiana. Where the heck is Clinton Falls? Well, it's west central Indiana, just about an hour west of Indianapolis. So we love it out here. In fact, the fall's just begun. The only trees so far that have lost their leaves are the cottonwood trees, but the leaves, they're changing colors, so it looks like we're just going to be around the corner. Love the fall. And of course, I love it because we have the opportunity to go back to school and see the school children. And I'll tell you, after a long, hard summer of doing what we do, people say working with animals must be so fascinating. And it is, but a lot of your life is spent building enclosures and putting up fence and repairing fence. And we won't even get into the brutalist part of taking care of animals, and that is the the cleaning portion of it out. So, in fact, I had an idea years ago. I was listening to the PSAs there about the bears. We have two black bears. We have a beautiful black bear. His name is Buck. He's about 8 years old. We have a female black bear, which happens to be his sister, and of course she's the same age, just a few hours difference. And we raised them since they were about 4 weeks old, I mean, from the bottle. And that's ideally what we try and do. And a lot of people will say, well, the fall's coming, the bears will get ready to hibernate. Well, bears don't really hibernate. A woodchuck hibernates. A chipmunk will hibernate. I can still remember having a woodchuck in captivity, and once the winter weather started, he would roll up into a ball, and you wouldn't hear from him until spring. But the bears don't do that. Now, if it's a really snowy day, they'll stay in their den. Because, believe it or not, our female bear does not like to get her feet wet. She doesn't like to walk on snow. She doesn't like to walk in the mud. I mean, she's very prissy. And get this, they are particular in what they eat. You know, people think, well, the bears will eat just about anything. That's not true. Because, for one thing, there's a particular type of apple that they prefer more than others. And about three Thanksgivings ago, my wife and I enjoyed Thanksgiving by ourselves. We did all the cooking just for us, and it was truly wonderful. And one of the things that she made was chicken and noodles. Well, she said, my chicken and noodles weren't that good this year. I told her, hon, they were terrific. I enjoyed them. I said, they were great. She said, no, they were kind of bland. So there were so many of them because, you know, we may have been just the two of us for Thanksgiving, but we cooked for an army, you know. We had tons of food left over, so I told her, I said, well, the bears will eat the chicken and noodles. They'll enjoy them. So I prepared two great big bowls of chicken and noodles, and I took them out to the bears. I go, there you go, guys and girls. Happy Thanksgiving. You know, they didn't touch them. They came up. They took a couple of smells, and I didn't have the heart to go back into the house and tell her that the bears wouldn't eat her chicken and noodles either. Oh, but the bear, and you know, bears are so intelligent. I've heard this, and I would totally agree with it, that the bear is probably as smart as your great apes, except they do not have the facial expressions. To give you an example of this, we have these great big huge horse troughs that we fill with water. And the bears like to sit in the horse trough, just like you would sit in a horse trough, and to fill it up with water, and they'll sit in there for hours and hours and hours, and they just love it. So I walk out there one day, and I'm looking, and the male bear, Buck, has got his trough completely pulled over. So I'm saying to him, I said, Buck, I'm talking to the bear as if I was talking to you. That's spent a lot of time in the woods. But anyway, so I'm telling him, now, Buck, I said, you need to push that horse trough over because there's no way I can put water in it. I said, I'm going to go get the hose, turn it over. And I acted half mad at him for it, you know. So I'm running around the corner to get the hose, and I came back. And that horse trough was turned over, sitting the correct way, and the bear was sitting in the horse trough with both of his front legs on the side, totally comfortable, waiting for me to fill it up with water. Absolutely. That is a true story. I couldn't believe it. But I had a good friend, as we're talking about bears here this evening. He was a bear trainer. In fact, you may remember this bear. This is Victor the Wrestling Bear. They don't have bear wrestling anymore because, well, people think it's hard on the bears. Because if you're not familiar with this particular activity, people will sign up to wrestle a bear, and the idea that if they were able to pin the bear, they would get X amount of dollars. So the wrestling bear weighed, gosh, well, he was a brown bear, so he weighed, oh, probably 750, 800 pounds. And what a brute he was, but what a nice guy. And my good friend George Allen was the one that worked with Victor. And he treated the bear like a king. I mean, the bear, you could just look at the bear. He had a beautiful coat. His body weight was absolutely perfect. He had a great disposition. And this bear was doing something. He was being enlightened every day. What do we call enrichment? That's what we're told all the time. We're inspected by the United States Department of Agriculture, and they always come to provide enrichment for the animals. Sometimes for the primates, you know what that includes, your monkeys and things? You put a television in their room so they can watch television. We have a baby baboon right now that, here's what it watches. It loves that show on Animal Planet called Meerkats, Meerkats Manor. I can't watch it. It's too sad. There and watch it with the baboon, and there's no way I can get through it. It's just too sad. So for this bear that wrestled, his wrestling, he thoroughly enjoyed. I mean, when he knew that it was time for him to wrestle somebody, the bear would get excited about it. Well, we were in Cleveland, and they used to have this huge convention center downtown, and they used to have this fantastic sports show every year. It always happened in March. And I had worked there several years. I would take animals over. In fact, we had a big portable reptile exhibit that we would display. And I'd taken wolves and tigers and give educational programs with them. And they approached me one year, and they said, Larry, they said, we have a big stage show, and we would like you to be the master of ceremonies for our stage show. And I thought, wow, this is the biggest sports show in the country. This is quite an honor. I said, yeah, I'd love to do it. And we had several acts. We'd have a fellow that had the retrieving dogs. We had knife throwers. And we had Victor the Wrestling Bear. So people would sign up before the show, and then we'd usually take three volunteers. In fact, one year, Joe Klecko from the New York Jets, that's when he was still playing football, signed up to wrestle. How did Joe Klecko do? Well, he didn't do very well. He ended up with a bloody lip. So he didn't pin the bear, let's put it that way. So one of the guys that wanted to wrestle the bear was this very large fella that rode motorcycles. And he was a little bit under the weather. He had just maybe one or two many alcoholic beverages. And we told him, we said, sir, we said, you cannot wrestle the bear. We have a rule that if you've been consuming any alcohol, there's no bear wrestling involved. So he was mad. Oh, he was mad. He thought that was the worst rule in the world, that he was going to call somebody. He was going to write letters. I don't think he could spell his own name, but anyway. So he was pretty upset. So we told him no. So during the whole stage show, and we had this great arena for the stage show, and it probably would seat 5,000 people. It was full. It was a Saturday. So here was this big guy in leather, standing over the side of the stage, and for everyone that was performing that day, he was hollering. He was hollering at the guy that threw the knives. He was hollering at the guy that had the retrieving dogs. He was hollering at me when I was explaining about the wolf. It was just, and everyone in the audience, by the time this 50-minute show was over, they all hated him. So the bear wrestling was last, and then he got really loud. Well, we had the three guys wrestle the bear, and what they would do every time the bear would finish up, he'd sit on a chair, and they'd put a muzzle on him because we told him, he said, don't put your fingers in the muzzle because the bear will bite your fingers off. because he had his teeth, he said. So we always muzzle him just to protect him. And he never really acted like he would use them, but it was just a safety precaution. So here he was, you know, and the show was over. Victor was having his bottle of Kool-Aid, and the guy was still over at the side of the stage, and he was still screaming. Well, George Allen looks over at me and goes, "Larry," he goes, "get him up here. Let him wrestle this bear. Let him wrestle Victor." So I said to him, in very matter-of-fact voice, I said, "Sir, we're going to let you wrestle Victor." The audience exploded. I mean, nobody had left that arena. This audience went nuts. Well, this guy walks up on the, well, he didn't really walk. He kind of stumbled up onto the stage. I told him, I said, "Sir, I said, you have to stay off the mat until we get the muzzle back on the bear." Well, George Allen wasn't even going to put the muzzle on the bear. He said, "Heck with him." I told him, I said, "George, you've got to put the muzzle on the bear." I said, "You've got to do that." So he does, finally, and the guy climbs up there, and I don't know. I'm being, I'm exaggerating probably, but it was probably 3 or 4 seconds. The guy was on his hands and knees. The bear was on top of him. He'd come up behind, and basically the bear's head was on top of the guy's head, but the guy was still somehow managing to hold the weight of the bear up with his two front arms. And, of course, when I saw this, I said right away, I said, "It looks like we're going to have cubs this spring." Well, the audience, that was just too much. They were just going nuts. Then they started screaming and going, "Victor, Victor, Victor." And it was a thing of beauty. Well, Victor's real name was Sonny. That's what George called him. Victor was his stage name. So George comes up behind Victor, and he grabs a big old handful of fur when Victor's on top of this guy, and he's twisted really hard. Then he starts screaming at the bear, "Kill him, Sonny, kill him!" The only ones that could hear this was Victor the bear, or Sonny, myself, and the motorcycle guy underneath the bear. Well, he's trying to swim out from underneath this bear and get away. Finally, George pulled the bear off of him. The poor guy was beaten up so bad. And Cleveland's finest were waiting for him as he exited the stage, and they proceeded to exit him right to I don't know if they took him to jail, but I know that for sure that they took him out of the building. But it always got me when I'd be behind stage before they would do this. Of course, the bear just totally enjoyed it. I mean, it was a great exercise for the bear. There wasn't any of these guys that were going to hurt him, not even Joe Klecko, the player for the New York Jets. But I always think, what does someone think that they could even come close to physically competing with a bear? It's just beyond me. But anyway, we get off on a strange subject. The grizzly bear has been taken off the endangered species list, and It was taken off. Back that up. And they're now classified once again as an endangered species. And, of course, a lot of the people out west are wondering, is this a good or a bad thing? Well, folks, the grizzly bear was just about gone, and he's slowly making a comeback. I know they estimate that in the U.S. that there are probably 400,000 black bears native to various parts of the country. And think about this for a second. You know, that's quite a few animals. And each year, how many people do we actually find that have been injured by a bear? I tell you what, if we're going to protect something, or if we're going to watch out for something that endangers human lives and safety, they need to go after lawnmowers. I mean, there's a lot more people that have been maimed or injured by a lawnmower than a bear in the wild. So this is crazy. So I know for sure that we have to keep these animals in the wild for a long time. So these youngsters that go to Yellowstone National Park, I can still remember in Yellowstone National Park, we were in Hayden Valley with my parents, and they just looked like brown dots because they were so far away. But when we took out our binoculars and we saw a female grizzly with her two cubs, I mean, they were a half mile away, and it was still one of the most thrilling moments of my life. You know, and that's part of the experience. That's part of going to places like Yellowstone and Rocky Mountain National Park. I can still remember being in one of my favorite places in the world, Rocky Mountain National Park. And if you're familiar with the park, there's an area called Endo Valley that connects to Horseshoe Park. And one evening I was standing in this valley, and across the valley there was this mountain, and there was all these rock outcroppings. Well, I take out my binoculars, and, you know, I'm just studying these rock outcroppings, and it's, I don't know, it's about an hour to start. I'm looking real close, and I keep looking, and I think I see some movement. Then I see a flash of something else again. And then I kind of zeroed in with those binoculars. And what I zeroed in on and realized what was happening was there was a mountain lion laying up on this rock ledge. And he was looking straight at me. And that sound, or that what I, not sound, but what I had seen was his tail. Because what they'll do when they're sit still like that, every once in a while they kind of flutter their tail up in the air. And that's what I saw through those binoculars. And that moment, along with seeing grizzly bears in Yellowstone, was probably one of the most coolest, one of the most exciting moments of my life. I have a good friend that makes nature films, and he lives in Boulder, Colorado. And he provides what is called B-roll to production companies. And what B-roll is if you're making a nature film, and this is done quite a bit nowadays with Animal Planet, Discovery Channel, is they will buy film footage of animals doing things in the wild. So he had a fantastic mountain lion. I mean, it was just an amazing cat. And he was in one of the state forests, not too far from Rocky Mountain National Park. And basically what he was doing is he was filming his mountain lion walking around in the woods, playing by a creek and all this sort of thing. So he'd been at it all day. And he'd taken a lot of this B-roll. And a lot of the production companies, when they're making nature films, this saves them a lot of money if they can just buy this B-roll from that's already been taken, versus calling an animal person to have them transport a wild animal to their wherever their location is and filming from that, because a lot of time involved, and of course time is money. So he's back here in the middle of nowhere, and he's filming this mountain lion. He's just about ready to call it a day. So he transported the mountain lion in this old station wagon. Well, he's loading up his equipment, and the mountain lion, believe it or not, is laying on top of his station wagon, just like he would lay on a pile of rocks. Well, he wasn't paying attention, and there was a snowshoe hare that had walked into this little area that we were at, and he kind of halfway hopped down along the side of this station wagon, not realizing that this mountain lion was laying on top of it. Well, the mountain lion sees it, and he looks at that rabbit. He looks and he looks, and then finally when the rabbit made a couple jumps heading back toward the woods, that's when the mountain lion dropped off of that station wagon, and he was in pursuit. So that rabbit takes off, he puts it in second gear, and this mountain lion is right behind him, and that mountain lion's only about in first gear. That rabbit heads down this trail, and this mountain lion, he's catching him quick. Well, at this very moment, here was this couple, and they're hiking up this trail. You know, they're enjoying Rocky Mountains. You know, they don't have a care in the world if you've ever been there, man. It's you're in God's country. It's unbelievable. You know, they're enjoying the crisp mountain air, and they're just hiking up this trail. Well, just about then, they kind of look up at the same time, and they see this snowshoe rabbit running right straight toward them. And about three paces behind him is this full-grown mountain lion. It's heading right in their direction. Well, my friend sees the mountain lion take off, so he says, "Darn!" He says, "Got to go get it." So he puts his camera and stuff in the car, and he's going to go catch the mountain lion. Well, here are these people, and they see this mountain lion heading straight toward him. But what happens is the mountain lion just doesn't pay any attention to him at all. He's just totally focused on the rabbit. The rabbit runs by him. And then the mountain lion is right behind him, and he runs right by the folks, close enough that they could probably feel his fur rub by their legs. And about 2 or 3 seconds later, they see this friend of mine. He's a big fella, and he's running down the trail in his lumberjack shirt, chasing the rabbit and the mountain lion. And he runs by him, and he doesn't say a word to him. Not a word. And he gets by him, and he finally catches up with the mountain lion, and they can see this all happening. The mountain lion, about the time this guy grabbed a hold of the cat's tail, the mountain lion managed to kind of get a halfway grip on the rabbit. So he grabbed the mountain lion, he tossed it up over his shoulder, and about that time the mountain lion let go of the rabbit. The rabbit's flying in the air along with it was raining rabbit urine through the air like a beautiful rainbow. And he puts that mountain lion over his shoulders, you know, with the front legs over one side of his head and the back legs over the other. And he walks up that trail holding that mountain lion like that. And he walks by those people, and he does not even say a word. Zip. Zero. He does not say a thing to them. And you know what they probably had to think? They said, "Boy, there are some really tough guys that live here in Colorado." And to this day, they probably tell that story over and over, and there's people that in their little cocktail parties that they attend, they look at them thinking, "Yeah, right, I'm sure that happened." But, yeah, anytime you work with animals, I'm going to tell you, in the 40 years that I've been doing it, you've got to expect the unexpected. And it's never boring. I've never had one day I've sat around this animal compound and said to myself, "God, I wish there was something to do. I'm kind of bored today." It's never happened. Of course, a lot of people say, "That's a pretty cool job that you have." Well, I don't really consider it a job. Consider a lifestyle. That's our life. This is all that we do. These animals, they're part of our animal family. My wife and I don't have children. We have four-legged children. But these four-legged children, when they get 13 or 14, all of a sudden aren't going to think we're the two stupidest things on the face of this planet. Of course, these kids are going to stay with us forever. We'll never have to marry them off. This is their life, and we think it's a pretty good one. Between the tigers that we've rescued and the bears, we have 20-some alligators here at our compound. These are alligators that people have obtained, either bought them or brought them back from Florida and Louisiana, and they thought they'd raise a pet alligator, and alligator gets about 4, 5, 6 feet long, many times not even close to that size, and they're looking for a home for it. And they call the local zoo, and the zoo says, "We don't need an alligator." So they don't know what to do, so they go to a river or lake and set them free. Of course, there's no way an alligator could survive a cold Indiana winter, so we have to provide them a home, and that's exactly what we do. And right now we have several alligators. In fact, our biggest alligator's name is Baxter, and if you go to their website, LarryTheAnimalGuy.com, and if you go to the store, click store, my wife wrote and I illustrated a children's book. It's called Baxter the Edugator, because we consider our animals teachers, and Edugator, pretty clever, huh? But you can order that children's book, and I think you'll enjoy it. I think your children will enjoy it for sure. You know, this is a blast. This is going to be fun every Thursday. We want to hear from you. We want to see your emails. Send them to me. You know, if you have questions, we want to know all about it. We didn't have anybody call us tonight because I was so windy, but I think Eric, brother, you did a pretty good job.
I've just been here hanging out and listening to the great stories. We did have one question from the chat room a little bit earlier, Larry, and that comes from old Bub. He wants to know if you can update everyone on your Department of Interior lecture, the simulcast that you did just a few weeks ago.
Oh, absolutely. Well, if they go to our website, you can actually purchase a copy of the DVD, LarryTheAnimalGuy.com. For the folks that live close to Shepherdstown, West Virginia, we're going to be back there on October the 17th with their wild animal collection. They have a beautiful facility there, and they have an open house once a year. And we've been going, this will be our 11th year we've gone there with our animals, and we'll be presenting three programs in the Beard Auditorium. It's a fantastic auditorium. And I know for sure this year we're raising a bobcat. His name is Gus that we're going to drag along, and but you got to see this olive baboon that she was born January 18th. Eric, she's a two-legged party. she is a hoot, boy. I'm telling you, and it's going to be great time over there. In fact, we've got some great guests lined up. I've talked to, believe it or not, Jim Fowler from the Old Meech of Omaha's Wild Kingdom, and he's going to come on, and we're going to reminisce about some of the times we went out to visit Johnny Carson with wild animals, and you talk about a ton of stories. There's a bunch of them. That was a blast. And I tell you, the hosts nowadays, your Lenos and O'Briens and Lettermans, they don't do it like Johnny did, but especially with the animals, and we're going to be talking about that. And also other issues, and letting people know where we're going to be at. We're going to Frankfort next week. It's Clinton Prairie Elementary. We're looking forward to that. And Clay City, Indiana, the elementary school there. And way up to Warsaw, Indiana, Jefferson Elementary and Washington Elementary. So our busy school season will be started, but we'll be here every Thursday at 11 o'clock Eastern Standard Time. 10 o'clock our time. And we'll be gabbing away and letting people know what's going on with our wild world here in Indiana. Should be a lot of fun. And Eric has volunteered to run the controls each week. That takes quite a commitment.
Well, I'm glad to help out, Larry. It's always a pleasure to sit and listen to you talk every week. I wouldn't miss this for the world. And just to throw out there, folks, if you have not had the opportunity to see Larry lecture, whether it be on wild animals or one of my favorite topics, Bigfoot or Sasquatch, you have to get out and see Larry talk. He puts on probably one of the best presentations I've personally ever witnessed, so make sure you get out and see Larry.
Well, that's awful nice of you to say.
Oh, speaking nothing but the truth.
well, enjoy it, and it was kind of fun to kick off this first one. We said we might have a few glitches, but Eric, I think you did such a great job. I think it went pretty smooth. I didn't even get a sore throat, and I still got. I could probably go for another hour, but they've got NyQuil. People can take their NyQuil if they want to go to sleep. But anyway, it's been a blast, and we're looking forward to the weeks to come for sure.
It'll be a great show, Larry, and thank you very much again for the opportunity to take part in it with you.
You bet. Lots of folks, lots of things coming up, folks, and also, if you would like to listen, every Sunday from 12 to 7, radiomom.fm. Believe it or not, I host a program called The 70s on Sunday. Go to my website, www.larrytheanimalguy.com, and if you'd like to contribute to our wildlife education and programs that we do, we would just love it. Support our tigers that we've rescued. In fact, we'll talk about those in weeks to come. We've just hit the very, very tip of this iceberg. There's lots to talk about. We want you all to be a part of it, absolutely.
Yeah, well, we're down to our last 30 seconds, Larry, so take us on home.
We'll talk to you next week. Remember, from deepest, darkest Africa across the polar ice cap, it's all here on the wild world, Larry Batson. Have a great week, everybody, and we'll talk to you next Thursday. And we love each and every one of you for tuning in. We've got lots of great stuff coming up, and I promise not to be eaten between now and then. We'll do our best. And we'd like to thank Blog Talk Radio and, of course, my non-for-profit company, Wildlife Educational Services, for bringing to you all around the world Larry Batson's Wild World.
Thanks for listening this week to Larry Batson's Wild World. Be sure to join us again next week at 10 p.m. for more of the latest outdoor and wildlife news and information, along with great tales from your host, world-renowned wildlife expert, Mr. Larry Batson. Tune in again next week for another exciting edition of Larry Batson's Wild World. Batson's Wild World is a Batson Wildlife Educational Services production in association with Blog Talk Radio.